And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 204. 204, welcome to the longest-running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. I am your host, Silas Lindenstein, and today's episode is another one-on-one review with the very funny and engaging actor Zora Iman Cruz. Zora Iman Cruz, she is the star of The Daphne Project, a new film coming out this weekend. It is scripted. A lot of it seems improv, but it's not. It's a very funny film. And I got to sit down with her and chat about the film and how the character of Daphne was created over the years. This is a mockumentary satire. The Daphne Project stars Daphne Wilko, played by Zora Iman Cruz, actress and social justice warrior, hilariously wreaking havoc on an off Broadway production of Euripides, the Bacchae. I forget how to pronounce that. It's been so long. I should remember from watching the film a few weeks ago, but I don't. In the Name of Progress, her progress, co-directed, written, and produced by Alec Tibaldi, the critic from critically acclaimed Spiral Farms, and Zora Iman Cruz from Amazon Prime's Legend of Sleepy Hollow anthology. This quick-moving New York-centric, stage-driven feature film invites comparisons to another critical favorite, Curb Your Enthusiasm, with its perfectly timed comedic gems. The Daphne Project, a film festival circuit darling, including top film festivals, Gina Davis, Bentonville Film Festival, and St. Louis International Film Festival, will open in theaters beginning in New York with a Quad Cinema on July 22nd with filmmakers in attendance for Q&A ahead of its platform release through Fuse Plus later this year. That's the whole thing on that. So that's who we're interviewing today. It's very interesting. Zora is also a woman of color, a black woman. And I want to let you in on something. We have had, since I've started this project back in the Black and a Half project, back in 2012, one of my hidden agenda items has been to raise voices of historically underrepresented individuals, the unheard. There has been a lot of progress in that. And sometimes I think it seems like that isn't needed as much anymore, but it is. There's a lot of ways which and we are still not represented, and there is a point of view that is not seen or understood, and sometimes ignored. Right, the new the latest Marvel series, Ms. Marvel. It is the least watched Marvel series so far on Disney Plus, but it is the most watched by POC households. So what that tells us is that stories that are not quote unquote white centered are not being watched by white folks. It's a little sad because I don't think it's reflective of most of my friend group. I think not in nerdism's worlds, but there is a lip service of support black work, support POC works. But then when it comes to actually watching them and digesting them, it's not happening. Even if it's not like this is a documentary or it's a, not that this isn't a preachy show. It's not. Yeah, you learn about Pakistan and India. Oh, my. Yeah, you learn some history from there a little bit subtly in a dramatic form. But that is not. That's not, you know, it's still just, it's a superhero story, but it's not about a white person and it's the least watched. And it's important to not just give the lip service of saying, oh, you should support black artists and artists of color. You do actually need to do that. It means you have to put that channel on. You have to stream that. You can't just say, I support shows of color. That's an important show to do. And then don't play it. Like, I'm not even saying why. Put it on and go to the kitchen if that's what you want. But you have to hit that play button. Now more than ever, if you are streaming it, they literally count it. It is a literal count of a household. It is not like the old rating systems that they probably still use. Maybe, I don't know. I remember being that one of the use where I filled out what I watched on each day and I logged it for part of the Nielsen ratings. No, that's not what it is. Like, they know exactly how many people watch this. They can't estimate, oh, so many people watched it, so this many million probably watched it. No, that's not how it works. They know exactly how many people have watched these, so it's really important. And I mean, in the end, I mean, all that happens is stories of people of color just are not going to be produced. If it is, I think you should decide if it's that important to you. If it is that important to you, put it on, watch it, maybe learn something. It's not just Ms. Marvel. It's Insecure. You know, it's Fresh Off the Boat. Tehran. There's tons of shows out there on every single platform that you can watch. There's an elementary school in comedy on Hulu. Support black work. Support people of color's work. Watch the shows. Do that. We got to stop with lip service. And so the Daphne Project, my guest today, a person of color, is the director, producer, or an actor in it. You can help support independent filmmakers of color become bigger filmmakers, right? Let them get in the studio system by supporting their work, by when they're young, right? And when they're young and they're new at this, let's help them rise up. Just check it out. Give it a chance. It's hard enough to get people to see independent works, but let alone, you know, you think independent work is hard to see. When people of color and women are running it, it's even harder. Some people argue, well, there's special festivals and such, but that still doesn't break the mold. It doesn't get in there. I think people forget how centric toward the white male perspective our viewing habits are. Starts young. It's even to a degree for a long time how we got our comedy, or how people expect comedy to work, like, is from a certain gaze, a certain viewpoint. And that's what new people are bringing. New voices, diverse voices are bringing to comedy is a different way of looking at the world. And I think that's very important in films. And that's why in films and other creative works, and that's been a hidden agenda of mine for 203 episodes, I guess, before this. Now it's out there. Not that I don't look. Yes, not everybody on this show is a person of color, a minority, a disenfranchised person. We have we have people of the Caucasian persuasion as well on this show, males, you know, and they're doing interesting work. And I support that. I support anybody doing interesting work and talking about them. But it's important to have platforms to house, to showcase voices of color, right? And I was recently talking to somebody as I was trying to figure out what I'm going to be doing with this in the future as my new review-only website comes on shortly, where I'll focus on movie reviews. Interviews will probably still stay here. And other conversations. And I was telling them, you know, about this secret agenda of I want to make sure that historically unheard voices get heard. That's part of the mission to me for Black and a Half. And my friend Richard pointed out, he's like, Silas, but the most important voice of color being heard is you. That you're out there speaking. And it's honestly something I hadn't really thought about. I've been so busy trying to find other voices of color and women that I've kind of forget that I am one of those voices. And, you know, I think maybe part of it is imposter syndrome. Why is my voice more important than others? So that's why I bring other people on and I let them do the talking. Because I want to hear from them. And I forget that maybe there's some validity to my own opinion. And I guess I figure it also probably comes out at some point. I don't need to push it. But I need to not forget, if nothing else, I have my voice out there, sometimes of applauding and sometimes of dissent. But it is my voice out there. On my voice out on this podcast, predominantly, always, I'm the anchor. Whether Samantha's on assignment, or maternity leave, or you know, we have guest hosts at times, and former hosts. My voice has been here for the 10 years, and will keep going. Maybe not as a rapid pace as we were a couple of years ago in the pandemic, but it'll keep pushing forward as I recognize that my voice is one of those unheard voices, and we will keep going. I still want this to be a comedy podcast to a degree, you know, but I'm also okay with it evolving to something more, but I think I want to try to get as many comedians on here as I can now. I used to have the anti-comedy rule, but if it's just going to be me, I got to get more comics on here, right? To discuss things. Or, I mean, I always think that comedy is the best way to examine social issues and such, so I think that's probably why it will have a degree of levity at some point. Folks, that is my soapbox for today. Our show here, number 204, it's about the Daphne Project with Zora Iman Cruz. I want to give a big thanks to our Patreon supporters. You too, for as little as $1 a month, can become a Patreon supporter, help the show keep going, tell me that it is necessary for as little as $1 a month. Or you can become an Inner Circle member for just like a couple bucks more, literally, like Tara Widener, Stefan Ward, Keith Nagel. You too can join their ranks and become an Inner Circle member. Big thanks to you, by the way, for doing that. And we do have others. We have others, you know, doing the $1. And so sign up at Patreon, patreon.com/ Black and a Half. And yeah, and that's what you need to do. Also, if you're in the market for a home, you can check out my other podcast, You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindstein. Whether you're in the market for a home or know somebody who is, refer them to that website. That is the website. This is the website for love. This is the podcast for love. That is the podcast for work, for dollars, for the Benjamins. One day, maybe this one will be too, you know? Once I got 1,000, once I got my 10,000 true fans subscribing, then I'm not going to be able to say your names, though. That won't work anymore. But yeah, so check out You're Buying a Home at yourbuyingahome.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. But that is that podcast, and this is this one. And so right now, folks, I want you to sit down or start jogging, whatever it is you do while consuming the content here. But I want you to relax, open your hearts, and open your ear holes, and listen to episode number 204, Zora Iman Cruz.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
The Daphne Project. I got to watch this last night. Zora, right? Zora Cruz. Writer, director, star. I mean, it's kind of fitting with the way the movie goes that you are the writer, director, star, right? I like that. What was the inspiration for the film?
I guess that the inspiration came out of improv, actually. So my co-writer, Alec Tibaldi, he and I were classmates at LaGuardia High School. And one year we got the idea that we would audition for the annual talent show and mm-hmm. sort of have these sketches that were centered around bad auditions. And people were doing all kinds of different things, but from that moment, I had kind of come up with the Daphne character, and
okay.
she's always been someone who, you know, thinks that she's reached this height of success and is kind of looking down on the little people. Meanwhile, like, no one knows who she is. and I think, like, a bit of that activism has always been a through line with her as well, and, we would literally walk around with Alex's camcorder and like record her adventures back then.
Yeah.
And then since then, you know, we kept in touch. We're still great friends. And we would always wonder, what would Daphne be doing now? And what would it be like to do a full production with someone like her? And it's funny because back in 2016, I was doing a production of The Bacchae, which Alec had come to see. And he always says that, like, after that moment, he was like, yes, this is what Daphne is doing. She's doing production of The Bacchae. It's super experimental and, like, kind of pretentious. And she's trying to take charge in this setting because that's what she does.
Are you an improv? Is your background in improv originally or...?
You could say that. I mean, like, I feel like I fell in love with acting through improv. I was taking classes at an after-school program in Queens that had dance and acting and music and stuff. And was just kind of having fun with it, being a kid. And I had a teacher that was like, you should audition for LaGuardia. Like, I think you might be good at acting.
Yeah.
And I feel like the thought had occurred to me before, but I feel like there was something really powerful about someone older than me and someone teaching me to sort of like give me that nudge of encouragement. And I've stuck with it ever since.
And what was their job? What was their job? That encouraged?
They were still a teacher? I want to find this woman. I want to like find her. She was teaching us acting. I just know her last name. Miss Malini. Yeah, Miss Malini was like super cool. Like you could tell, it's like looking back on it now, like she just seemed like an edgy theater artist that loved working with kids and like giving us prompts and different scenes. And I feel like I was the only kid in the class that wasn't shy. I was just like willing to play and come up with characters and make people laugh. And I don't know, I feel like those sort of instincts were there from an early age.
Was she a woman of color or was she? Okay.
Yes. I don't remember where she's from, but she's definitely non-white.
Yeah.
Which I feel also was part of what was so encouraging about her pulling me to the side, mm-hmm. was that there were so many, it was a diverse space, but in terms of kind of like one-on-one fostering and stuff like that, like I don't think that was happening on a regular basis. So it felt important that we had been working together, and she sort of pulled me to the side and wanted to encourage me. And I think also let me know from that time, it will be a little difficult. The business is like much easier for certain people.
Yeah.
But I just remember being told to pursue it because it was something that she thought I was good at. Yeah.
My person was
very important.
Mine was Mrs. Ginta at the time.
Mrs. Ginta.
She was the drama. She popped in just to do the after school drama program because my high school didn't have like a drama. We weren't big enough to have drama class, but she did the school plays for us, and she pulled me aside. Like she walked through the guidance council and saw me and was like, "Silas, come here, talk to me." Like, and then said, "You need to promise me when you go to college, you're going to audition for a play." And she changed my life. And she was a white lady though, but so she wasn't aware of the difficulties the POC would have going in as much. I think she didn't really think about it. I mean, she was at the time when color blindness was there.
Right.
She was thinking of it where she was blind. But
but
I credit her for changing my life, really. I never thought about it. And
I remember like after that conversation with Miss Malini, I started looking up people that had gone to LaGuardia and, you know, had started careers, and it was countless people that I admired and wanted to follow in their footsteps. And I remember, because she used the word pursue, I remember like going home and looking that up. And like, that was the first time that the meaning of that word even like dawned on me too. It was like very, it definitely opened something up.
Pursue as instead of becoming, or just be an actor? Like, was it something about the word pursue?
No, I guess the idea of working towards something, of like building those blocks. Of like, sure, it may start with auditioning for the play or auditioning for a school's drama program or taking a class. But I feel like the use of that word made it clear that there's a journey, mm-hmm. and like there isn't sort of like an overnight thing, unless, I mean, that's a thing that I've now learned. Being a professional is that it there's all different kinds of pathways, but
the 15-year overnight success, you know,
right? Like not everyone gets discovered in a mall.
Yeah.
some people have to pursue it.
And don't you find though that the people you really respect in the business, even the ones who may have gotten started through nepotism, they did have to still work.
Mm-hmm.
At it. Like,
yeah.
I've had friends argue about like Hollywood, oh, it's just full of nepotism and stuff. And I was like, yeah, but I mean, they still got to work. I mean, they still got to put it in because it might get you in the door, but they're not going to base a movie around nepotism's not going to get you a whole film.
Right.
Like, talent in the end ends up winning. Now, right now is our, I don't know, I think of it as the POC Renaissance right now, because we're getting opportunities where they're actively trying to engage. You know, Issa Rae is one of my heroes right now. Like, oh, they can just, that she can start pursuing passion projects and such. And who can she bring on? What was mockumentary a style that, is that a style that, why choose the style for Daphne? Like, was it?
I feel like it was important to kind of capture all of those quirks, not just of Daphne, but of the people around her and who she's working with, and get all those little imperfections. And I feel like there's something about mockumentary that gets you behind the veil. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like that cringe humor of like, why are we seeing this? Like, couldn't this have been a private conversation that no one else would have to suffer through? I think it came out of, I mean, Alec and I always cite Christopher Guest movies like Best in Show, Waiting for Guffman, and we're big fans of The Office growing up. I just think there's something about that style that's always spoken to us. And it just seemed like a natural fit. Because even when we were sort of guerrilla style filming her in high school, it was very much just us walking around the halls of our high school and kind of forcing people to improv with this character.
Yeah. I love that.
So I think there's always been sort of a roving kind of like awkward, should we really be here style to the filmmaking. And we wanted to kind of do that in a more concrete way with this film.
Is there a point that you and Daphne cross? Like, is there any of Zora and Daphne?
My mom thinks so.
Yeah.
It's like, you have all these people full that you're just acting. And I'm like, I am not calculating or like maniacal like she is. I do think I relate a lot to Daphne's passion. Like, I feel like you have to have a certain level of just like insane confidence in your ability in order to be a performer or be in the arts. So I feel like we merge in that way of just kind of like, I'm focused, I believe in myself, I'm gonna go for it. But I feel like everything else is pretty much a departure from myself. and it's fun to play that, because I feel like we were also very concerned with her not being likable, like almost intentionally. Like, I feel like with female lead characters, likability comes off as such a must, or if we don't have it, the audience or people aren't rooting for them. But I just feel like we've been watching unlikable male characters for years. And I do feel like it's sort of a turning point that's happening now, where it's like, women can be assholes too.
Yeah.
You know, it's been happening in real life for years. Why not on screen?
What do you think is, did you, like, you were directing and acting in this. How did that, like, was it, what was it like directing yourself? Was that, did you talk back to yourself?
I guess it was more of like Alec and I directing everyone else together, and then him directing me in the acting moments, or us kind of like both directing me. I don't know if that makes sense. I felt more of the hat switching between takes. I'd be kind of like, all right, I'm wearing my acting hat right now, but when it's a scene that I'm not in, I want to make sure my actors feel comfortable and that we're hitting the beats. And like, even if we are improvising, making sure the journey of the scene is intact. Like, you know, we gave the actors the freedom to play and kind of end up at certain beat marks on their own. But just making sure that things were running smoothly and seeing how shots looked afterwards. And it's just a lot of just switching. I'm a Gemini, so it felt kind of natural to just kind of be switching modes throughout the day.
Right.
But I feel like luckily I feel that Alec was kind of like, yes, you are thinking about all these things, and I am too, but I also want your performance to feel free and fun, and I want you to feel like you can play as long, as well as the rest of the cast is playing. So
would you do this again? Would you direct and act again, do you think? If it's a non-Daphne that you don't know as well?
I mean, I'm open to it. I just feel like with me personally, with my dream for this industry, it's to kind of end up doing a little bit of everything. Okay. So I feel like the stars would kind of have to align, but I'm definitely down to do it again.
What would your next, is it comedy? Is that your passion or is it rounded?
It's pretty rounded. I mean, I find a lot of joy in comedy. And there's something like very special for me when I realize that I've hooked my audience or that they're laughing with me. And I feel like that is kind of what has led me to this place and this field. But I feel like I'm interested in drama. I'm interested in tragedy and all of that. Like I feel like I did a lot of classical theater, a lot of Shakespeare and stuff. Like I love all of it. But the next thing I'm writing is completely different from Daphne in tone. Okay. So I don't know.
What genre is it?
Right now it's feeling like a thriller, if you will, kind of psychological thriller in that vein. It's I've been calling it my prison movie.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, like, even in that, I'm finding ways for dark humor to kind of be in there so that, like, the seriousness of the subject matter is kind of balanced by social commentary and observation and stuff like that. Like, I just think tonally I'm always trying to hit several different things that make people think.
I love that. I'll have to, we'll have to chat again when you get on.
Yeah, I mean, because it's the writing process is a beast of its own. Mm-hmm. And I went back to school for acting and graduated during quarantine, which was interesting. Because I feel like I've always been acting and writing, and I feel like that's what's so special about the Daphne Project is that it gave me the freedom to sort of explore both and just jump into it and see what happens. And now I feel a lot more freedom to do it again.
Oh, I did want to ask you about the writing aspect of this. Was there a level of improv in it? Like, how much of it was scripted? Was it that made it?
We have a pretty traditional script. It's about 70 pages, I would say. Excuse me. I just feel like during the audition process, it was important that we had the actors read the scene as is, uh-huh, and then see how they would play the character through their improvisation. So it is a blend. It's funny, I had the script pulled up the other night, and it's funny to see what was always kind of like in the bare bones or like in the blueprint,
yeah,
and also what kind of came out of play and editing and all of that. So it's weird. It's like watching it. Some of the really strange things are written. They are on the page. And then a lot of it is just like gems that happen on set and in those moments. And, you know, I think people feeling safe enough to try something different in the moment.
Yeah.
So it is a mixture, but we wanted to give the actors sort of a framework of like, here's the scene, here's how it has to end up, but it's up to you how we kind of get there.
Okay. Good. Yeah. I was very curious. And I will say that's also a testament to how much I enjoyed and acting is when I'm not sure. And I, mm-hmm, even think that it's, I was like, that's improv, right? And when it's not, I was like, well, that's beautiful then. Like if that was scripted, a scripted moment, that's fantastic. Okay. So here on the Black and a Half show, we have seven questions that we ask people the first time they come on. They're the Black and a Half world famous seven questions. Okay. So let me get those before you get out of here. Number one, what are you most nerdy about?
Most nerdy. I feel like this is like a cop out, but like like film and TV, like the Emmy announcements came out the other day and I was like immediately reading them and like looking at everyone's post and like celebrating in my living room and like the ceremony hasn't even happened. I just think that I'm very fascinated with people's careers and I just end up in wiki holes all the time. like I think also like the business of the industry is very fascinating to me. Like I'm just always looking at like the studio bought this person and like this assets and here are all the names that they've had. And like, I just think media in general is very fascinating and I get really steeped.
That's fine. No, that's a good answer for filming. Number two, what's something that you love to eat?
Chicken, like in all of its forms, grilled, fried, smothered. Like I feel like because I have a lot of food allergies, like I can't have seafood.
Oh.
So I'm just kind of like meat will be where it's at.
Yeah.
Even I love cooking chicken too. Like it's always good.
Okay. What's something that you love to drink?
Love to drink. I am immediately going to alcohol. I love tequila.
Really?
Which I feel like, yeah, it's an odd one.
The sipping ones, or just a lime and a?
I prefer a margarita with like good sour mix. I hate a bad sour mix. It just kills the whole vibe. Yeah. But either that or like tequila ginger ale is really good. One of my first jobs was at a tequila bar and I feel like I just built up an immunity to it. So I genuinely enjoy it, whereas other people steer very clear of tequila. Yeah. And I do.
Awesome. Okay. Number four, what kind of music do you love?
Ooh. I always tell people I listen to a little bit of everything, but I guess I always tell people actually that I have the music taste of someone's dad. I love classic rock. Like I love listening to the Beatles and like Journey and the Cars. And I don't know. I'm really into that. As far as contemporary music, I just love pop, like put on some Ariana Grande or Beyonce and I'm having a good time.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Number five, what do you love to create?
Ooh. I want to say a mood, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like if I'm organizing something or I've brought people together or hosting something, I like everyone to feel comfortable and I like conversation to flow. I think anytime I'm facilitating or just creating a mood or a vibe, that feels really good.
I like that. That's a great answer. Number six, what's a game you love to play?
I like Scrabble. So I feel like there are a lot of other games that I get confused about the rules.
Okay.
I have this amount of letters. I get to make words and like, I'm good at that.
Do you know all the two letter ones and stuff? Do you get that deep like into it? I don't know. I forget that they were like XI is a word or something.
Oh yeah,
like,
it is. I have no idea what it means.
Me neither. I'm like, there's a whole bunch of, I think that should be a rule on Scrabble. Like you're going to play those trick words that, you need to know the definition of it or something.
Please define it right now.
Yeah. Use it in a sentence at least.
Yeah.
Okay, last question. Number seven. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
Well, I hope they're referring to me as an entertainer. And I think, I don't know. I think my care for other people, I want that to be noted in some way. Just, so I think I have a big heart And I'm always thinking of other people, and hopefully that'll be in there.
That's nice. That's nice.
It's a deep one. Wow.
We get deep here in Black and a Half. The Daphne Project, it opens very soon, right?
July 22nd.
Yeah, I had the written down. Okay, so next week. Okay, so we're looking for that opening everywhere, video on demand, I presume, as well.
It'll be at Quad Cinema in New York City for 1 week, hopefully two. We do really well, and he will be streaming on Fuse Plus later this year.
Nice. Excellent.
Yeah.
We'll keep our eye out for that. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I'd love to get you back another time as your other projects develop, and get Samantha on here too, my other partner, who's kind of doing maternity stuff during the day. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Silas. This was great.
Okay. Black and a Half.